The Skagway Assembly will honor a U.S. Army pilot killed in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. And in Haines, summer tourism gives way to the slow season. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Abby Collins. Those stories and more are up next. The Skagway Assembly will begin Thursday's meeting by honoring a former resident killed while serving the U.S. Army in Afghanistan. On Sunday, the Department of Defense published a press release confirming Chief Warrant Officer Jacob Sims died from injuries sustained in a helicopter crash. According to a proclamation from the mayor and assembly, Sims grew up in Skagway and graduated from Skagway High School. The assembly will also continue to discuss a memorandum of understanding with White Pass and Yukon Route Railroad. The municipality and White Pass are trying to negotiate a new waterfront lease. Negotiations are motivated by the need to renovate Skagway's port to accommodate larger cruise ships by 2019. White Pass President John Finlayson sent a letter to Carlson and the assembly earlier this month, requesting an executive session to help complete negotiations. The meeting is Thursday at 7 p.m. in Assembly Chambers. The number of tourists that visit Haines each year is trending upward, but some of the same qualities that bring visitors and their economic potential to Haines in the summer drive them away in the winter. KHNS's Barrett Wilbur takes a closer look at the beginning of the slow season in Haines.
It's the time of year when Haines slows down. Cruise ships are gone, and local restaurants and businesses are closing their doors. Carol Ann Wooten is the director of tourism in Haines. She says summer visitors are key to the town's economy, and their numbers are rising.
The bright spot in our economy in the southeast is tourism. It's definitely increasing, and from all intents and purposes, they expect it to continue to increase. People want to come here.
And they do. If every cruise ship that came this summer was full, it would mean 72,000 people docked in Haines. According to Wooten, another 54,000 people came by ferry, 36,000 drove over the Canadian border, and 9,000 arrived by plane. That has a big effect on Haines' economy. According to a 2011 McDowell report on Haines' boat tourists, the average cruise passenger spends $85 in Haines. Fast ferry passengers spend $135. Wooten says visitors are drawn to Haines for the same reason that their buying power has such a big effect. Haines is small, and what it offers is limited. Wooten is quick to say that's not a bad thing.
We're just real Alaska. They're really looking for the intimate, local, cultural experience in a much smaller and more intimate setting. I think that's what sets us apart. I think it's our biggest selling point.
But while Haines' small size and limited options charm visitors in the summer, in the winter, those same qualities can keep visitors and their economic potential away.
When all of our restaurants close in the winter, it's definitely a conundrum because you want to have restaurants and places of business open for people to come visit, but at the same token, they need visitors in order to have a reason to be open.
Mary Jane Siebens has owned and operated Mountain Market year-round for 27 years. She knows the catch-22 well.
Well, I think it's the chicken and the egg. The more year-round, steady income would be nice, I think, for Haines. And I think people would stay open longer if they knew there was something they could depend on.
Siebens says the market can only stay open because it's multi-purpose. It's a cafe, coffee roastery, grocery, and liquor store.
When I just had groceries, I felt like I wasn't going to make it.
But as visitor numbers continue to rise, Wooten hopes there's room for change. She'd like to see Haines become a year-round town. Others see new potential in the winter months, too. Lee Robinson and his wife, Darcy, moved to Haines to operate the Rusty Compass Cafe. They opened in May and are preparing to stay open for their first winter. Robinson knows it's slightly risky.
So I think there's a kind of a word of caution, like, hey, if you're going to stay open, just be careful. I really see a lot of potential in Haines. It's hard to believe, quite honestly, that there's only a couple of restaurants open. We'll do our part and try to give people a choice.
And at least a few visitors are grateful. French tourists Angela and Maxime drove to Haines hoping to find good restaurants and pizza they'd heard about, only to find they were closed.
Yeah, but we are not disappointed because we knew that it will it was not the season anymore and that a lot of things should be closed. We didn't want to be here when all the tourists are here. So that's also part of the game.
Even without pizza, they got a taste of the authenticity that makes Haines appealing, both to visitors and to locals. In Haines, I'm Barrett Wilbur.
When a household cleaner or a box of batteries is barged to one of Alaska's remote communities and sold in a store, it's commerce. But many of those items aren't destined for a one-way transaction. A lot of hazardous waste shouldn't be tossed in a landfill. So at great expense, small municipalities are stuck trying to fix the problem. How do you get the potentially dangerous trash back out of town? Elizabeth Jenkins reports as part of the Coast Alaska series, Talking Trash.
This is where we put all the waste into containers when we're offloading cars.
Aaron Widmeyer is leading me around a bulky Sony TV, a spray can of Raid, and grease from a high-end restaurant. We're at Juneau's hazardous waste facility, where people drop off their stuff that shouldn't go in the landfill. Widmeyer works for a company that contracts with the city and borough of Juneau. He makes sure the trash is safely packaged, so it can be shipped out. And he says the job comes with a few perks.
The amount of free stuff that I get. I haven't had to pay for anything for like the last 2 years. Like household cleaning supplies, laundry soap, you name it.
It's not just Widmeyer who picks up the swag. Anyone in Juneau can stop by and look for a half-used bottle of their favorite cleaner or bug spray. But what isn't scavenged has to go somewhere else. That's because Alaska doesn't have any permitted hazardous waste treatment or disposal plants. So regulated hazardous waste has to be shipped back down to the lower 48. And around the corner from Widmeyer, in a city office occupied by one man, is where the negotiations for that happen.
This is my abode.
Jim Panor is Juneau's solid waste coordinator, and he knows this business inside and out. He got his start in Washington State.
I grew up as a landfill kid rat.
Panor has been in Juneau for close to a decade, trying to make the math of shipping the city's hazardous waste pencil out. If you ask him, it doesn't. But during his time, he's been able to make it more affordable. He saved the city around $120,000 a year just by figuring out a way to treat latex paint so it can safely go in the landfill. And the capital city is one of only two communities in Southeast with a weekly drop-off site.
So we have time to work the waste stream. Before, at a one-time event per month, you don't have time to work the waste stream.
Literally a stream. It's a term used to describe the life flow of garbage from beginning to end. Still, there's some trash that's so risky to transport, the cost makes it nearly impossible to barge. Old smoke detectors and exit signs are radioactive. So Juneau has to shell out extra to ship those. Then there are out-of-date boat flares, which are considered highly flammable. Right now, there's no way to get those out of town. Panor says this creates a giant paradox. Commercial products wind up on store shelves with relative ease. But once it becomes hazardous waste, it's a lot harder to transport out.
I mean, even Juneau here, we're the capital city and we're 32,000 people. We're the biggest city in Southeast. We struggle with it.
In rural parts of the state, the struggle is even worse and the stakes can be much higher. The state's Department of Environmental Conservation used to have a program that helped barge out hazardous waste, but it was cut in 2004. And since then, it's been up to the communities to figure out their own method. Sandra Woods, who inspects landfills for the state, says a lot of small municipalities are just trying to do their best. But the funds are limited, and money is usually needed for other things, like clean drinking water.
By the time you get to solid waste, the money's usually gone.
There is a federal program that helps Alaska Native villages barge out hazardous waste, but it's being discontinued in about 3 years. Lynn Zinder, an Anchorage doctor who specializes in solid waste management, calls it an impending catastrophe.
It's very worrisome from a public health perspective.
Zinder helps run an environmental nonprofit, and she's a member of the Solid Waste Alaska Task Force, a group that's trying to help villages prepare for the change. She says she's concerned. As more hazardous waste goes into the ground, it could leach into the environment and contaminate subsistence foods.
Those landfills will expand out to rivers. They can expand out to town. The access can be so horrendous that people start just keeping their garbage in town.
Jim Panor, Juneau Solid Waste Coordinator, thinks the state needs to step up and help more communities get rid of their hazardous waste. He acknowledges it's an unlikely scenario, given the state's current budget deficit. but he envisions a fund that could earn interest, designed specifically for trash. In the meantime, he says consumers should view the half-empty bottle of nail polish or antifreeze differently. There's a branding issue.
I don't like that term, hazardous waste, because you went to the store and purchased it.
Panor says he's never used a jug of Drano to unclog his sink. He knows even after it's tossed, someone's going to pay for it. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
For KHNS News, I'm Abby Collins.